Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Wednesday, June 26th, 2002. In the Koinonia Creekside Room this afternoon, we will be listening to a forum titled Sharing Our Stories, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. The title number is FO2002-25. Let's listen in.
Welcome back. If you were here last night, this is the second in a series we're doing for Gay and Lesbian Pride Week. And last night, we had a forum titled Sharing Our Stories, Gay and Lesbian Christians. And today is Sharing Our Stories, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gay Men. And this is really a discussion, and I've asked a few people to sit up front and face you just to help us get started, who are people who are part of the Holden community and that I could identify as parents and friends, and we've got other parents in the audience and other friends. So once we get started, we'll just, in usual Holden fashion, see where the discussion takes us, and it will be good. So why don't we start by just having our panel introduce yourselves for a couple of minutes, and who you are and where you're from and what you do or something like that, and just let us know what your connection to this justice gospel issue is. And then after you share a little, we'll just open it up and talk together. Jerry, you want to start?
Jerry Voss. I'm from the snack bar. Also from southeastern Minnesota. We're currently traveling and wandering and spending 4 months here. We have a daughter that's a lesbian, that's 28. She's lots of other things besides that, and she's a little bit lesbian too. And we are very pleased about it. And we brought lots of things to talk about, but we're really anxious to hear what you have to say too. And I just have to say that I was just talking to Dorothy and Roy when they came in, and they sat out there at first, and I said, well, the tables have certainly turned, because they led the first discussion that we went to a month after, and they talked to us. And I think that was 95. So here we are.
I'm Val Box, and I'm serving the village as medic right now. I've done lots of different things in nursing. Lots of things that I think prepared us, you know, for the day that one of our kids told us that, you know, about her sexuality.
I'm Dorothy Satry, and have sat in, usually the chair has been in the, it's been a setting in the fireside room here at Holden. For those of you who were here last, was it Friday night, when we had the 40th anniversary celebration. Was anybody here last Friday night? So some of you heard me tell how Holden has made a difference. In fact, that Holden is open to discussions and presentations, resources, celebrations around same-sex orientation. That's what's made a difference. I am this week finishing 12 years of serving on the board, and that first forum that we were involved in 1989 was a gift to us and made such a difference in my life. That's why Holden has been special, and wanted to serve Holden and make a difference for others. We have a lesbian daughter, Sarah.
I'm Roy Satry. Each and all of our four kids have made a great difference in her life. And Sarah has made a difference, taking a little different cut at reality and conveying that to us. I cannot imagine not having moved through. My relationship with Sarah and my relationship with my other kids and my relationship with just a great uncounted number of lesbian gay people. It's just been, I cannot imagine not having, life would have been much smaller if I would not have met us.
We're from Rochester, Minnesota.
Well, just to complete the stereotype, I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota. So if you're going to have a bias against certain things, you can conclude that all sympathizers with gay rights are from the southern part of Minnesota. And David Lee's from Northfield. So. I'm Peter Thompson. I'm kind of the long-term resident left-winger. I think that's probably why I'm up here. And maybe we have plenty of time. Can I tell a little? I said a few things at the Gay Pride Day about, I think I was kind of had a transformation this year, and it's out of real relationship. Just as these people, you know, become very invested in this issue because of a loved one, I was always intellectually invested in this issue because it was unfair. Stereotyping and bias and discrimination are unfair. And so I've spent 33 years kind of practicing law and fighting injustice. And I had a big case in Minnesota for a judge who was a real well-known guy, and there was kind of like a Scopes trial. It's on the front page every day. Crane Winton was his name, and he was, by everyone's estimation, about the best trial judge in the state of Minnesota. And he was gay and he was in the closet. And so the only outlet he had for intimacy, he felt at least, was to do it clandestinely. So he would pick up prostitutes and take them back to his home. And one of these prostitutes got busted for something else and wanted to get out of the jam that he was in, and so snitched off Judge Winton, which got to be big publicity. And this was probably, 15 years ago, David, or something, quite a while. Anyhow, through that process, it was a long trial, and it was really quite an amazing thing. It was not unlike the Scopes trial. I mean, basically, it was a public lynching of someone for being gay because he was a judge. The theory being that his conduct was detrimental to the administration of justice because it was contrary to statute. In other words, there's a statute on the books of sodomy that he was involved because he had some sexual activity with a violation of the state statute. And so, you know, we yelled and screamed for a long time in court that the statute was never prosecuted against anyone because it makes it a gross misdemeanor in the state of Minnesota for a consenting married couple to engage in a chosen act of intimacy in the privacy of their own bedroom. And so that's why it's never prosecuted. But yet they used it as the linchpin to remove Jeff Winton. The other thing that was interesting in the case is that there had been a heterosexual judge probably 5 years before that, who I think also was from Southern Minnesota, and he got caught engaged in heterosexual prostitution, and they gave him a slap on the wrist and put him back up in. And it was virtually indistinguishable between the two cases. And the amazing thing, you know, I viewed in the case was people's closed-mindedness to a different way of life. The prosecutor was a very well-respected lawyer from Mankato, Minnesota, and, you know, his questions really were so bizarre. I mean, when you'd ask Judge Winton questions, he would say, well, you know, if you were living with another man, instead of housekeeping, what other sorts of things would you do? You know, there's all this implication that, you know, everything about a gay or lesbian person was weird and because different, disgusting. And it just seemed like, you know, 1950s morality was being focused on this person because of their sexuality. Nevertheless, as I confessed on the Friday, is that third, last Thursday or something? You know, I am also guilty of biases because there did seem to be something like, to me, you know, unnatural or those sort of things. And so intellectually, I was for gay rights, but I'm heterosexual, and I just, you know, somehow had a little hesitancy until this year when Dan and John became my best friends. And Adam, who also came out partially with my help during the year. And, you know, the three of them are just, you know, dear friends to me. And all of a sudden, my biases just, you know, they appeared so ridiculous. And so, besides being intellectually committed to fighting that injustice, now emotionally I kind of turned the corner. And for me, it took, you know, a close relationship really to look at it down deep in myself.
Well, thanks all of you for introducing yourselves. And there's really no agenda except we'll move into a conversation. And besides being parents and a friend of the movement, as Peter just mentioned, he's got experience in law. The Satries have experience in the church on Holden. And Val has medical and hospice experience, and Jerry was a middle school principal. And so there's all sorts of ways this can go. We want to just raise some issues or share some of your own stories. We'll get started.
I have been thinking about this ever since last night. I was married to a homosexual. So that puts a spin on it that you may not have heard otherwise. But first I want to tell you about our daughter, Kirsten. I'll keep it very short. Kirsten, in April of her junior year of college, called us up and said, "Mama, I'm pregnant." And we were devastated. And we talked it over, and of course, Bill's very protective toward his little girl. So you had that. We talked it over and we decided that we weren't ashamed of her. And we weren't going to conceal this. And we were going to talk to everybody. And you would not believe the stories I heard from other people. Because I said, she's a man and mother. I got back all kinds of support. I just, incredible. My mother reacted very violently to it. I think it would have been better. Kirsten was going to college in the town where her mother lived. Her mother didn't want her friends to know about this. But she went down to see the baby when he was born. She was willing to take Kirsten in and keep her and babysit the baby. But she didn't want her friends to know about him. She saw to it that he got baptized in April. He was born in January. The pastor didn't want to baptize him because he was a child of sin. And mother got that ruled over. So, you know, you had all of this. It sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
This is why I wanted you to know about Kirsten. For me, I've never had a normal married sexual life. I realize that now. And I've been celibate since 1963 when it all became out pretty obvious. At that point, Bill was a school teacher. He lost his job because a teenager complained he was able to clear the police. My parents came, were very supportive, and saw to it that there was no police record, but he lost his job. We didn't have any. Well, I worked for a year. He got a second job. But I lived for the next 30 years wondering what was going to happen if somebody found out, and how we were going to cope, what we were going to do, and what we were, and I had the decision to make. Am I going to leave him? Am I not? And I cared for him. I didn't really want to. I thought it was important that my children had their father. He's a good father. He had a relationship for those 30 years with another man. Uncle Bob was a part of the family. Uncle Bob came for holidays. Uncle Bob came over. He was part of my children's growing up. It's just, and yet I had this feeling that I was, if it were a heterosexual relationship, my husband had a mistress, you know? And yet it wasn't, because it wasn't his fault that he was homosexual. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. This is real weird. He died 4 years ago of an unexpected blood clot. And I will confess, my first feeling was relief. I don't have all of this hanging over me anymore. And it was after that that I felt free to talk to people about this. Mm-hmm. Because before that, it was going to hinge on his job, his reputation, and I had to protect him. The last point I want to tell you, I'm a librarian, I read a lot of fantasy. And there's a book that you people need to know about if you're working with young people, teenagers. This is a book by Mercedes Lackey, and unfortunately it's fantasy, and a lot of kids are put off by fantasy. It's called Mercedes Lackey Magic's Pawn, P-A-W-N, like a shit just now. It's the first volume of three, there's a series of three. This is a medieval type fantasy world, and Vaniel is living on his father's estate, and his father suspects that Vaniel is probably homosexual. His father is one of these people who just doesn't want a homosexual child for any reason whatsoever. Everybody has instructions to make a man of Vaniel. Vaniel is a very talented musician. He is artistic. He is, and eventually, and he's injured, severely injured as part of this make a man of him, he is sent to his aunt, who will do something for you, and he dreads this. Well, it turns out his aunt is a mage, and she is also tutor for three young mages. And one of them is gay. And Danielle and Thailandel fall in love. And you have this wonderful love affair. And that's when he finds out he didn't even know that homosexuality existed, much less that he was. And then his lover dies, and you have a lot of conflict. And I like particularly what Moonsong says later in the book about homosexuality. The fact that it occurs naturally in nature. It's not abnormal. It's okay. It happens. So if you're looking for something to give to a young person, by Mercedes Lackey, L-A-C-K-E-Y, and it's in print in any bookstore. I've seen it in Barnes & Noble all the time. That's all I want to say.
And we're about to buy it for the Holden Library.
Thank you for sharing that. I think your story, and I think part of the social transition that we're living through in this generation is hopefully moving us to a place and time and history when people will be able to accept themselves early on in life, and relationships with tragic elements, like you spoke of, won't have to be anymore. Others, people want to share or ask our panel? Yes, sir.
I had a genie at my wife in the front row there. We had a friend who had a friend, a Presbyterian pastor who gave a sermon one day, and he brought up two Bibles to the pulpit, and in one he had cut out every reference of any kind that could be just a stretch to be about homosexuality, and what are they, 5, 6, 7, and then that we know that that's debatable, of course. In his other Bible, he cut out all the references to greed and love for money, and his Bible fell apart. And I've come to lots of these forums at Holden, and I just find it interesting that we have forums on this, but we don't have forums on the thing that makes our Bible fall apart and that tells us what we're really like. And it's just an interesting conversation. That sermon has stuck with me forever.
Yeah, really. Thank you for saying that.
I'm and curious. I think the fact that we have to have these forums is the crux of the matter. We were at the churchwide assembly last summer for the ELCA, and the church could not have done anything more to lay the groundwork to allow the delegates to accept diversity of any kind. I thought the worship services and the music and the people they had in key places in the service, I thought it was well staged. And people who have been to a number of them thought that we moved a long ways. I didn't feel we moved more than an inch and a half, but I don't understand the problem of the church. The question. Just listening to everybody, the whole coming out process, you come out your whole life. Every time you do it to somebody else, and it gets easier and easier, and we've kind of protected ourselves by it. We found if we bring it up first, then nobody has an opportunity to say something unaware that might be offensive, that they'll be embarrassed about later, because I'm sure they won't mean it. And so we have tried to introduce it into almost any conversation. And our daughter has very intentionally made her life choices. She chose not to go to the seminary, and I don't know if she ever would have, but she ruled that out immediately because she didn't want to fight that battle. And she wasn't going to live other than who she was. She chose to live in Madison, Wisconsin, where it was very accepting. She got a job where they knew that she was lesbian. She lives in San Francisco now and can enjoy, a whole variety of acceptance.
I guess that's one of the places I'd like to jump in, because I'm so impatient. I know that we're glad for the change that has happened and that we are all aware that more is happening all the time. And I'm still impatient. We also bring it up in conversation with acquaintances, people we meet. Partly the reason you gave, but also because we want to celebrate Allison in our midst. It's, we talk about being welcoming in our congregations, and welcoming certainly we hope in our homes, and it doesn't happen enough. But I want us to be beyond that. I want us to be at a place of affirmation in people's lives, and that is something else. And the church, is still having their slow movement toward this, and I'm sitting out here with, when we first learned about this, I think it was 12 or 13 years ago now, and I feel like a very different person at age 62 than I did at 50, and time is going by real fast, and not much in that span of time has happened in terms of the freedom to express your sexuality in a very natural and open and affirming way. So I'm always grateful for these forums, because I think just the conversation may be edging us along a little further, a little faster, and it's still not fast enough. And I don't know what to do about that.
A year ago, our daughter Amalia and her partner had a commitment ceremony. And, there was the conundrum of, do you invite all the aunts and uncles? Do you invite all the cousins? And, their thought on it was, we only want people there who are going to be happy for us.
Yeah.
We don't want to have to educate anybody. We just want to enjoy it. And I was giving this little talk to my sister-in-law and my niece. They aren't mother-daughter, but and my niece, who I didn't really know what she thought about the whole thing. She sat there over lunch. She's, "I'm happy. I'm happy." She wants to come. And so then for those who didn't come, we had a party at our house later. And Jerry's great aunt, who is in her, well, she's 90 now, but she got the invitation and she called her daughter right away and she said, "Well, I don't know what to do." She said, "What will I say?" And Mary said, "You'll say congratulations. I hope you have a happy life." And she came and she had a wonderful time and she never quit talking to people. But just, you know, like you say, sometimes you feel like making the point and other times you just want to celebrate.
Yeah.
Enjoy it.
And you don't want to spend any more time anymore having to rehash the old stuff because you've gone on somewhere yourself in a different way.
And that's where the church should be at.
Yeah.
I mean, they have talked it out. And, you know, if some theologian who is very knowledgeable wants to sit down and give us 45 reasons or something, but there isn't any of that.
If they want to start another study group, I'm just sick of it.
Yeah,
I don't need anymore.
My mother, about maybe 5 or 6 years ago, went to a workshop which the Northeast Ohio Synod, where my parents lived, had on the question of same-sex relationships. And my parents have been the typical, atypical, but in a certain category, typical liberal, open, accepting, "We love you always in that wonderful sorts of people," all along, which is lovely. But my mother, after this, finally said to me, after this very intentional workshop sponsored by the Synod, where she was speaking with, she said, two nice young men who were planning a very nice ceremony. She said, "Oh, and suddenly I realized that this is not something that you simply need to struggle with, that this is something that can bring you joy." You know, this, whatever this is, we're talking about. But that it was that sort of shift that we're all sort of describing. Because no one wishes to be burdened by the burden of having to educate or be a role model entirely. These are necessary things, but it would be lovely to view them as provisional and eternally changing. That would be my hope. Anyway.
Well, the role model thing is really interesting because, at least in the kind of the culture that I was in and when I lived in Spokane, I was with my partner for 15 years, and when we started to have some difficulty, it was like, "Oh, nothing can happen to you. You've been together the longest of any of us," and you know, it always made me go back and think about the fact that who are the role models for lesbian couples or for gay couples? You know, who serves as that role model? And, you know, it's really interesting for me because for me it was easy because I could look at my parents and like Dorothy and I were talking the other night, you know, commitment is commitment. And it doesn't matter who is in the commitment as long as there's an understanding of that. And one of the things that that I had happen last a year ago when I had moved to Washington, D.C., I had never discussed with my older nephew the fact that I'm a lesbian. And he had come home for Christmas holiday, and I was still in Virginia. And he and I had had this discussion. He's half Chinese, and he was discussing the fact that there's not a lot of Chinese Lutherans. Well, there was this wonderful article in the Post about this church that's like 30% of the church are Chinese. It's a Lutheran church in McLean, Virginia. So I had cut this article out and sent it to Matthew and had written him a note. And in the mail, crossing in the mail, Matthew had sent me an article. And what it was all of a report on all these gay and lesbian couples worshiping in Spokane, Washington, and all there was one from the Lutheran Church, a couple from the Episcopal Church, and all these different relationships. It was a beautiful, beautiful article, and I knew two or three of the couples, but we still have not had time to really sit down and have a discussion on it. But I thought, oh, thank God I don't have to teach him or go through this at an explanation or anything. And, you know, he never said anything. It was just, he sent that. And it was just kind of fun to have him acknowledge me in the relationship that I had with Jane and the things that are important for me in my life.
I'm curious, as parents and friends, did you have a coming out process like me as a gay man? I had a coming out process. It was painful, it was struggling, you know, but there's good light now. I'm curious.
I went into the, Sarah came out of the closet and I went into the closet for too long a time, a year and a half, 2 years. That was too long. I stopped getting after myself for that. But when I came out, well, we came out here in this village. But Barb was in here a minute ago. Barb Rossi, she asked.
She's
there.
Oh, she's hiding.
Oh, yeah, hey. Okay, pardon. Well, when we were here in 89, Sarah and her partner Irene had worked here 2 summers prior to that when Barb was in the village pastor here. And when Sarah finished her master's degree at the University of Oregon, Dorothy and I and Sarah and Irene came here in celebration of the master's degree. And Barb asked Sarah first, she said, this is the first time that we're aware of that the parents and the lesbian daughter and partner are here together at the same time. Would you consider having leading a forum, an adult forum? And you know, get this now, we have not said anything before. So we said something. You can listen to it if you want it. It's in the tape library. One family story. And the, believe me, the fireside room was filled. So this whole thing of coming out, you know, we never gave any of our kids a language to express this. I mean, they just didn't know it. I suppose I don't know how long. I don't know how many times I've used the word gay or lesbian or homosexual. We just hadn't talked about it. So if you don't have language, what can you do?
It took Sarah a long time to come to her own self-understanding. It was,
sure.
You know, all through college she was struggling with her own understanding and her own identity. But as we've said, it's a lot of times because she didn't have language to put with it.
Two things. I'm David Wee, partner of Karen. We didn't have the choice about going into the closet. Our daughter, Allison, was a college student at St. Olaf, and we both were working at St. Olaf. And she finally figured things out and then wrote an article in the student newspaper that began with the words, "I am a lesbian." So all of our friends knew, you know, so we didn't even And it was wonderful. Nobody gave us any flack about it. Second thing is, because PFLAG is one of the topics here, and maybe everybody here has experience with PFLAG, but our daughter Allison urged us to go to this, to the meetings of this organization. And I remember still walking into the church in Minneapolis where we were going to our first meeting of PFLAG, wondering who these people would be and, you know, what this was going to be like.
David, what does that stand for?
Oh, it stands for Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. There's only one F in there, but there's
family
two.
Friends.
Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. So it's an organization that's international. There are chapters all over the country with three goals. One is support of our gay and lesbian, our GLBT loved ones. Second is education of anybody that we know who needs to learn more about this issue. And third is advocacy. We go to work and try to get out on the front lines and advocate for justice. So we went to our first PFLAG meeting, and you know, even though we had been outed by our daughter, you know, we were pretty shy about this, and we didn't have the language really for talking about it. And we met these folks who were just way ahead of us. You know, here were these couples who were, they'd gone through all of the worry about it. One of the couples we had met who were just the most confident leaders, the woman told us she cried for a year after her daughter came out. But now, you know, this was way behind her, and they were off doing things. And it gave us, you know, great courage and confidence to realize that lots of parents have worked through the difficulty when we don't know what to do. We don't know how to respond, we don't know how to talk about it, we're worried about what our colleagues will think. And we now, Karen and I, 10 years ago, founded a Northfield chapter of PFLAG. People told us that you can't have a PFLAG chapter in a little town like Northfield, you know, about 12,000 people, partly because people are afraid to go to such meetings in their own hometown because somebody might see their car parked in the place where they figured out this meeting would be. And there just weren't enough people in a little town. So, but we decided, well, we'll try it anyway. Within 3 or 4 months, we were meeting in our living room with 34 people, and none of whom we had known, you know, had GLBT people. And some of those people had never told anybody. And now they're out there, you know, some of them starting PFLAG chapters in another town, and, you know, they're marching in the gay pride parade. So,
let me add one sentence to that. One thing that was interesting to us is that the number of parents who came with this hesitancy and fear were church people.
Yes.
They hadn't gone to their churches, they hadn't felt that they could speak there.
Yeah.
But they were at the PFLAG meeting. Some of them were ministers and spouses, and but it was amazing to me how much silence from within the church was either greeting them or that they felt they could speak. So it made it feel really important to do.
Mm-hmm. I think once in a while we kind of stumble onto a mission in life, and you know, Dorothy and I have given quite a number of adult forums out and around the church, mainly in southern and southeastern Minnesota, but it's just a consistent thing, either after the forum or within a week or 10 days, someone will give us a call and can we sit down and talk with you, and then there'll be someone else who was at that same meeting, and that's just a consistent thing. So it's a good thing to do. Yeah.
Just a little background on PFLAG that I started thinking of as Dave was talking is two of the people that are the founders of PFLAG, actually their frustration in forming the organization to begin was because their son was so totally rejected by his church. And they were Presbyterians, and the parents went to the church pastor to explain to them that their son was gay. And the response was, well, he can't participate in church. He can't, you know, he can come to the services, but that's it. And it was such an awful experience that they just left the church. And that was one of the reasons they formed the PFLAG organization, was to have other people to provide support for them and for them to give it to other people.
Yeah, I have to say, along with that, that one of the reasons that spurred us is, yes, we had the learning experience through our daughter, but I kept just seeing her as one of so many. And it was that lesson, I guess. Yes, it was her. But think of all of the other people who needed to have someone speak up for them. And we're always up here at the Gay Pride moment for the parade, and I love it because it's a parade that goes both ways. But but it causes us to miss the one that's back in Minneapolis. And one of the most moving things I've ever done, I think, is walk in that parade in Minneapolis where you're part of the PFLAG parents. And you have people come out, young people, others as well, come out and give you a hug and say, thanks for being here, because my family isn't yet. And, you know, that's really something.
I have a friend at home, her name is Karen, and she's a widow. And she was planning the wedding of their daughter, and during the midst of all this planning, her son came out to her, and it was a very hard time for her. And I wish she was here now to hear all this, but so she finally told me this. She told me this about the wedding, way a year or two afterwards, how she. We were eating hamburgers at Burger King, and she wanted to tell me, you know, my son told me that he's gay, and she just was so, didn't know what to do. And I think she's only told a couple of people in the congregation, and the pastor knows, but last year you had that Vesper, and I bought the tape and took it home, and I listened to it, and I told her about it, and so she listened to the whole thing. And about that time, he called. And they hadn't talked very much about it. And so that was a good opening for her, for Karen and her son to talk about it. And I just wish she was here. I've been trying to get her to come up here for years. But so, you know, but she's just at the very beginning stage. And the only thing I can do to help her is, you know, tell her. And there is a PFLAG group, I think, in Corvallis, but I don't think she goes to it. She hasn't quite gotten to that point yet to go to it. And it's kind of especially bad because she's a widow. She doesn't have anybody else to talk to.
I think what we can hear in all of these stories is the opportunity for ministry that's constantly with us, and that indeed it is not only gay and lesbian people, but parents and brothers and sisters sometimes. And I also want to lift up the importance of the friends in PFLAG and that word advocacy. And last summer, Paul and Jeannie were the summer teaching coordinators. And toward the end of the summer, There was a pastor who came and did five Bible studies on a variety of issues, and just one of those five was looking at some of the Bible passages that have been historically talked about in terms of this issue. And it was in Fireside. There was a large turnout. It wasn't a forum, it was a class. And outside in this hallway, a man was really angry, and he kept getting angrier and angrier and pacing back and forth and refusing to come in and listen, but just pacing, and finally he burst into the room and started kind of evangelizing about God's punishment. And in the course of that scene, three different elderly women who'd never met each other before, sitting in that class, got so upset that they all said, one after the other, I have a lesbian daughter, I have a gay son, and I've never told anyone this before, and there's no one to talk to in my small town, but they were standing up to this guy and started weeping, and Paul jumped up and started talking back to this guy. And I was sitting in the balcony, kind of exhausted from the summer, and the idea of, oh, we're going to go through this one more time. And there's both sides. I mean, the ministry we've been talking to, and then that prophetic witness that has to happen, that just keeps moving this forward. And whether it's ministry or prophecy, you know, both are called for at some time, and it helps move us forward.
There's a fun story that happened down, there's a farm down in central Virginia, and they opened the farm out in the springtime for kids to come and see stuff being planted, and then they come back in the fall. They actually have classes that go out there, and they pick pumpkins and do all this, and about 15 years ago now, the guy decided he had to do something to bring in some roadside traffic. And so he got this huge rainbow flag, and he stuck it out in front of his farm. And all these people would stop and come in, and they'd say, oh, I love your flag, you know. And he said he kept thinking it was really strange because he was getting fewer and fewer families that would stop by, and more same-sex couples. And finally, he got one weekend, there was a fundamentalist church group that started protesting that they were promoting gays and lesbians, you know, with this, and advertising it with this flag, and he had no idea. Absolutely no idea. So it was a couple of weeks later, there was kind of a round drive that goes into this farm, and there were protesters on one side, and there was the PFLAG organization from Central Virginia on the other side. Well, this has gone on now for 15 years, and the PFLAG organization in Washington, D.C. does a huge, huge dinner dance and auction in the wintertime, and I went a year ago, and they honored this family. And the interesting thing is that their youngest son had a sex change operation and ended up going to Smith College, and he was there at this presentation, and the stories they told were just amazing. And here this just started out as just a, you know, just wanted a colorful flag. But the guy said the minute the protesters got there, he said, you know, that was when he found out what the flag was about. He said the minute the protesters got there, he said to himself, he said, I don't give a damn what that flag stands for. I'm going to stand for whatever it stands for. And he just took off, and it's just been, it's so much fun. Now people go down deliberately just to see this huge flag and to visit this farm.
As an introvert, I just want to announce to all those of you who really want to say something but haven't dared to yet that we're moving toward the end of the hour, so this is your time to raise your hand and speak up if you're really antsy about doing that. In the meantime, Mark has something.
Just two short things. Well, one is, yes, advocacy and the prophetic voice, but also I find that the president, the gift of presence, and simply saying in conversation casually, so-and-so and his partner, so-and-so and her friend, whatever word is most prayerful for you, as we tend to say here, that, or my daughter, my son, transforms what is too often in too many people's minds a politicized issue about other people elsewhere, outside of whatever bound of community they happen to be thinking about. And what that does is that it simply saying, no, this is someone you know, this is my son, my daughter. It transforms the issue immediately. And it's rather amazing every time that I've seen that happen. It ceases to be about other people and about them, if you were, and becomes about us. And that's a very useful thing and a very useful service performed by those who are thoughtfully present with those for whom this is an issue. The other thing that I wanted to mention with my librarian hat back on is that there's an interesting memoir about the notion of the family coming out, written by a woman named Rob Foreman Dew, called The Family Heart, a memoir of when our son came out. It's the woman and her husband. He was a professor at Williams College in Massachusetts. She was a writer. And their son came out to them at a certain point, went to college. You know, in some ways, it's a typical genteel upper middle class tale, so we can indict it for that if we want to, really. But it's also a very thoughtful account of what it means to come to terms with this in community, so I would recommend it.
Straight back, sure.
I have lots of ideas, and I don't know if I'm going to put them together or not, but I think I liked your initial sentence when you said that life would have been smaller if you had not had your daughter's life. And so I grew up in a small world, but fortunately I grew out of it. And I see, you had mentioned before that there are lots, things are not changing so fast. I would say the opposite. I'm just so happy to see so many changes. Looking at myself and my life and my children's life. Last night I was just so happy to see all these children around there. What a difference. Their life is going to be different than our life was when we were children. You know, they're exposed right now. And I just want to tell a little story that shaped my life a lot. When my children were small, my oldest child was 5 years old, and my husband was next door performing a wedding, and my child asked me, "Mom, where is Daddy?" And I said, "Well, he's in church. There's a wedding." And he said, "Who is getting married?" And I said, looked at him and said, "A man and a wife, a man and a woman." And he looked at me puzzled. "What are you saying? This is just not obvious." For him, having grown up with friends, we had lots of gay and lesbian friends, that was just not the answer. And that shook me so much that it shaped my teaching. I am a teacher, and I am extremely careful with the language that I use with children. And I always, when I ever get to a point when I talk about men and women or couples, I make the point to get out of that, to make it a big world.
Well, just a quick note that for those of us who are afraid of what will happen in our churches and so on, Jeannie and I belong to a 2,500 member church in Davenport, Iowa. I mean, if that isn't the heart of the mecca of conservatism, I don't know. And our pastor had three sessions in the sanctuary, adult education sessions on this, set up by some other discussions about thinking outside of the box and the whole kind of new paradigms with life and so on. Nobody left the church. Support came out for, what are we thinking? For the church in a kind of a bold step forward that I think would surprise a lot of people. I just tell you that story. So don't be afraid to go home and tell your pastor, or if you are a pastor, go ahead and do this. The world will not fall apart. Your church will not collapse. In fact, you read the rest of the story. You might get more members.
I just wanted to just say a word of thanks to all of the work and celebration and advocacy you've all done, because my nephew just came out over Christmas, and my sister, his mother, and my brother-in-law really just had absolutely no experience with this and no resources. And so it just, you know, it is important, because there are places, you know, that there's nothing, you know, and if it weren't for people like you just working, you know, there's just not the support. So some people are starting, you know, at the bottom, and it's where they are.
I think that really points out something important, because many, many people do come out at significant family events, you know, like Christmas, Thanksgiving, and those are the stories I've heard and what I've read. Those are really important support times for parents and family and friends during that period.
I just have one more story that this, I think is, it's real meaningful to me. My father was dying of cancer, and I did not have the courage to tell my dad. And I went through the whole thing, you know, what's the worst thing he could do? Will he quit loving me? Would he ever quit loving me? No. And I went through the whole thing. I just could not do it. I absolutely could not do it. And one day, about a month before he died, we had converted the den into a bedroom for him, and had a hospital bed, and I was sitting there talking to him. And he looked at me and he said, "I've been thinking about Lou and Carol." Well, Lou and Carol were two women that he taught with and had taught with for years. He was on the PhD committee for Lou when she got her PhD, and these women had been friends of theirs for forever. And I said, "Well, what have you been thinking about Lou and Carol for?" And he said, "Well, you know," he said, "I don't think God ever intended either one of them to live their lives alone." I didn't know where he was going. I said, "Well, no, I guess not." And he said, "You know, just the fact that they found each other and they could make a life together." And he went on and on and on. And a month later, he died. And you know, my dad, I didn't ever come out to my dad, but my dad came out to me. And I know it makes me mad. I just kick myself now, and I think that I haven't, that I had that opportunity, that he just kind of laid there, and, which was typical of our relationship, was he'd present this whole thing, and I'd look at him and go, you know, 2 weeks later, I'd decide I was going to act on it. But it was so, you know, and it actually has more meaning that happened that way, because we cherish those same people and the fact that he used them in this example. But it was so freeing to realize after he died that he knew, even if I didn't know. And this was pretty early on. I had just kind of come into my own and kind of realized what my sexuality was. And a comment that you made that I wanted to follow up on, it, Dave, you and Karen do something that I would like to see more people incorporate, because it is a leveling that is very, very meaningful to me. And that's, you do not use sexist terms of spouse and wife and husband, which I don't know if they're sexist to other people, but you use the term partner, which is on the same level with gays and lesbians who also use that term. And it's so wonderful, because every time you say it, I kind of get this pat on the back, and I think, oh yeah, that's the same partnership that I've known and that I want to have again. And I commend you for doing that. I don't know if you do it intentionally, but keep doing it and teach others to do it. And parents start doing it. It's great.
Your story about your father reminds me of the earlier comments about we didn't have language, and there were two women who lived together for like 40 years in my neighborhood while I was growing up, and who were always known as the girls, in order to distinguish them from actual girls in the neighborhood. They would be called the girls at the phone company. And I was like 30 years old before one day it struck me, oh, they were like a couple, and no one ever talked. And I wonder how isolated they were. If they, you know, or if they had other friends. But anyway, we live in a time when we do need to, in our impatience, also remember how fortunate we are that we've always been here. And in earlier times, it was harder.
Just another thing about language. We've been at many weddings of friends, and our daughter Allison has been with us. And at one wedding, we suddenly realized that she was weeping. And it was the language of the the sermon. You know, there's no love greater than that between a man and a woman, and you know, all this kind of stuff that was made it so difficult for her to attend weddings of her friends. And then when our son got married, he and his wife asked if I would preach the wedding sermon. So I did, but I promised Allison first that I would write a wedding homily that I could preach at her commitment ceremony without changing a single word of it. And I did it that way. And, you know, she didn't have to weep at her brother's wedding, at least, you know, for those kinds of reasons. And those are things, you know, that we do need to be sensitive to.
Yeah, I guess one confession, one of the hardest things we do these days is go to weddings. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Truly. Yeah. And I don't want it to be like that, but that it points up. I mean, if you have three children and two are of the greater culture and one is not, the difference is in your face all the time. Coming home to the home church and how they receive her.
I remember one time too, you were in one of these forum situations that was more contentious, and the speaker was going on at length about just sex, you know, illicit sex, sinful sex, and David, you just said very quietly, what you are asking is that these people never fall in love. And that just transformed, you know, because that's how we experience, you know, it's you know, when we're at a wedding, at a traditional wedding, we don't talk about sex all the time. We talk about love and that's what our lives are about too.
You don't know what they're thinking.
I did want to add, I blasted the church a lot, but our minister was wonderful. When we talked to him, Val told him later if he wasn't called to Stewartville for anything else than that 2 hours with us, it was all worth it. And our church had done the sexuality studies, and that did give us a lot of language and understanding.
I have one brief comment, and that was to thank Sonia for sharing her story, and to also publicize the fact that bigger PFLAG groups I know have supportive members for spouses who have been through this, as you have, where a spouse has come out later as a homosexual individual. So there's support for that also. And as far as terminology, I try to introduce my daughter and her partner as my daughter and my daughter-in-law. Some people know I don't have a son, and some people don't. But my daughter-in-law especially likes to be considered my daughter-in-law.
I would be very happy to talk to you one-on-one. Anything I can do to satisfy curiosity, whatever you want, I'm here.
I'm amazed at the change since, you know, in conversations since 1989, you know, a year or two later, David and I sat as board members, or during board week, sat on a discussion or a forum. And I'm so pleased with people being able to tell their stories and be open so much easier than what it was even just 10 or 12 years ago.
Dorothy, wasn't it that year when you had an empty chair because nobody felt comfortable enough to to be gay and in that chair and represent the gay community?
Yeah, that's correct. Because there were two of us parents, and they had two chairs for gay members of the community, and only one person agreed to be there because
someone sent a letter saying why they felt so uncomfortable to be able to
I'd forgotten
be
that.
There.
Well, one of the things that happens to gay parents now is they inherit gaydar, and do dog and date arts. Because Dorothy and I roomed together the first time, I roomed actually with Karen Strom the first meeting when we weren't in the village. The second meeting, I roomed with Dorothy, and it was like 30 seconds into the room, and it's, okay, and she tells me about Sarah, and which was obvious why she was telling me about Sarah. We had the best weekend. We shared stories, and we talked, and it's really been good for me because, you know, sitting on the board, I mean, and I came out to the board this summer for the first time. I mean, I was pretty, well, I wasn't secretive, but I certainly didn't come right out and, you know, and come out to the board. And Dorothy picked up on it. She picked up on it. It was great. And so I think it's nice that parents, you know, inherit GADAR for their children.
Chris, what should, you know, we've been friends for 5 years, and I always wanted to just have, and we've always got along well and had trust, and it always bothered me that there was never the colloquy about what the situation was. I mean, who should say something or do something? And I mean, I've got pretty good radar, I think, too. My partner's cousin is a friend of ours, and he's a PhD, and I'll bet you 99% he's gay, and we do what Mark said, we give him every opportunity, and our community has a lot of gay and lesbian couples, and we always mention we do this and we do that and we do this. And his father is the Missouri Synod pastor, and I'm sure he would never want his parents to know in a million years. And it's so frustrating to, you know, keep trying and never, you know, have him be able to trust us enough to share.
And that's, yeah, that's got to be what it is. It's got to be from the person. Because Dave and I were talking earlier, and I was telling him, we have a mutual friend. We were at a retreat here last fall, and we have a mutual friend that said to me when we were leaving, he said, nobody knows that I'm gay, so please don't, nobody at home knows this. Please don't, you know, say anything or let this get back to Tacoma. And I looked at him and I said, you are kidding me. I said, everybody knows. And they know college, don't they? Yeah, I mean, everybody knew. And I just laughed because we had the most wonderful time together, and he subsequently passed away this winter, so his secret was held. But I just laughed. I just thought, you know, and that's where it has to be the comfort of the person.
Well, I don't know. I think that it means a lot to somebody if you can let them know that it's okay to talk about it. It sounds like you
have. Yeah. I mean, as far as talking, but it is for, okay.
Yeah, because you know that. For most people, if you're going to talk about it, you're afraid that you're going to be looked down on and criticized, and maybe you lose a friendship. And in most cases, it's not worth it because it doesn't come up very much. But it sounds like in this situation, you could be very supportive to him. My sister talked to me once, and we were apart we weren't together much during the year, so there wasn't much of an opportunity to really talk about that sort of thing, but she said something really nice, and we've been able to be very open about it since. She made the effort, and what she said was, I have a question, and she worded it so nicely. She said, do you and Ken have a loving relationship? Mm-hmm. And it said that it was okay, just as you're talking about gay issues or whatever, says it's okay too. I think that my feeling always has been, if somebody is willing to ask that question, I know they can handle the answer. Mm-hmm. So
that's
it's another view of it.
But one thing I learned early on is the importance of never outing another person out of respect, and being very careful of my language or my naming. as I either relate stories or anything, you know, not to give information that shouldn't be given, because I think that's just the epitome of being respectful to people before the faith.
I don't want anyone else to do this, but I want to go and pick up my mail by fire.
Well, it's time for celebration. Yes. So thank you all for coming.
You're an example of hope.